thing about it.
Wow.
I'm the crime dog here.
That's not bad. I could be that guy. I could audition for that.
It looks like he's already been replaced.
When did the replacing...
I sound so disheartened.
Well...
McGrath the Crime Dog debuted in February 1980. He was invented by Jack Keel, an ad man who also did McGrath's voice for many years. And it says at the bottom here, according to the Des Moines Register...
Always your first source for
it. It was announced that when Jack Keel retires, he'll be succeeded by Sergeant Steve Parker, a police officer from Des Moines. Now, this is an old biography. It says, as of mid-2006, the changeover has not been officially announced. But Parker does fill in for Keel on occasion, presently.
Okay, but so we don't even know that this is him then.
It's got to be him because he doesn't sound like the original.
All right, never mind. I'm saying, look, I'm not disputing that they're replacing him. Clearly, the changeover mid-2006, they haven't heard that. He fills in from him,
so
for him on occasion.
Mid-2006.
Okay, all I'm saying is that there's, I wonder if this is a new PSA. We don't even know when this PSA dates from.
Where do we get those PSAs?
From a woman named Lacey Turner, who works at... Attention, Lacey Turner, if you are listening, please now to be calling. 503-733-2970. Don't call and pretend to be Lacey Turner. She's our public... She does the public affairs stuff here. So she's the one responsible for all of those. She would know... See, because won't you feel foolish if it turns out this PSA is like 5 years old?
If you want to be depressed, just open the PSA folder.
No, I think she updates our PSAs. She freshens them up.
Crack babies. Paralyzed, a modern scourge.
Paralyzed veterans. Stolen babies.
Stolen babies?
I like stolen babies.
All right. Well, there you go.
Teens driving drunk.
Moving right along, ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, live from the city that never sleeps, our good friend, CNN radio correspondent.
New York City, oh yeah, New York
I love this song.
City, I love New York City, oh yeah, New York City.
Yeah. CNN radio correspondent and living deity, Gary Baumgarten. How are you, Gary Baumgarten? What's going on in New York, brother?
I just love the intros that you give me.
It's
fantastic.
It's a great song, man. I love that song.
Not just that, the way you introduce me.
Well, it's all...
great. I'm serious.
It's all about being me, Gary. Your song is actually really great. Yours is great. Roop's is great. I like Lisa Goddard. We use the West Wing thing for her. We have this one for McCarthy that I don't... it's not very good. It lacks energy. Do you have McCarthy's... a theme, Ed McCarthy's theme. I'm going to play, we'll play Ed McCarthy's theme here. This is... So this is, I believe, the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
That is Ed McCarthy sitting at the bar, putting down a little martini, watching the women walk by,
maybe,
hoping that his wife doesn't catch him.
Well, he does. I mean, he is there in the Big Easy quite frequently.
Yes, he
so,
is in the Big Easy.
Maybe it is appropriate. Is that the others are also? I mean, I'm always afraid that intro for him is just too low key. But who knows? Maybe.
Well, I'll tell you, with my intro, I'm always geeked up, whether the story's worth being geeked up about or not.
Well, no. Here's why, actually, and I know that sometimes it may appear that we pick stories for y'all to sort of speak on, because you guys can talk about any number of things. But for people who don't know. I had to just put one of these on the website one of these days. I had to just scan and post this prep sheet because people ask us. We talk about the CNN prep sheet a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Hold here in my hands. And I had to just scan it one of these days. People see what we're talking about. What it does is it lists each of y'all's names, where you're based, what time you kind of get on the clock, and then what stories you're sort of covering today. And here we have Gary Baumgarten is available from New York after 7 a.m. Eastern time. On the Dow/economy, Billy Joel's house, and Wendy's/Tim Hortons. And I know that it must seem like it is very random or arbitrary, sort of apropos of nothing, what stories we sometimes pick. But here's the thing. We have, in Portland and in the outlying areas, we have a great coffee chain here called Coffee People. And it's a Portland-based, a homegrown company called Coffee People. And it's, you know, kind of a, you know, just sort of a Starbucks-type thing, but with a very great, cool, very distinctly Portland vibe to it. Well, long story short, we found out the other day that all of the Coffee People restaurants, all the Coffee People outlets, are all going to be bought and closed by Starbucks. Starbucks has purchased them and is not going to continue to run them. But Starbucks bought them, is going to close them, and then they'll be remodeled and reopened as Starbucks. And I don't hate... I'm not one of those guys that just hate Starbucks just because Starbucks is fine. I just don't like to buy my coffee there because their coffee is terrible. I prefer this place called Coffee Bee, which is going to be gone. So that started this whole conversation, though, about coffee and what it's like on the West Coast and the East Coast and the Starbucks and where that's popular, where it's not. And this name that came up over and over and over again was, wait for it, Tim Hortons.
Of course.
And so I have never, is that just, they're just an East Coast thing? Is that the deal?
No, it's a Canadian thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Canadian thing, although there are Tim Hortons in the United States. When I was living in Detroit, I would occasionally cross over into Windsor. Everybody thought I was going there to see the Windsor Ballet, but no, not me. I'm a good boy. I went to have the Tim Hortons coffee before they opened up some Tim Hortons in Detroit as well.
Good. And so it's is the coffee exceptional? I mean, is it
Yes. Is
it great? Because we hear a lot about
yes,
it. And
it's excellent coffee, yes. I love Tim Hortons coffee.
It's and good coffee is so hard to find. It's inevitable that it's going to spread to this part of the country.
One would hope for your sake that it does.
But there's, I did not know that it is. Is it a wholly owned subsidiary of Wendy's? Is that the thing?
It was until today.
Until today.
That's right.
Give us the breaking news, Gary.
Now, breaking news now. It's now back in the hands of the Canadians.
All right. Godless Canadians.
They sold it back.
All right.
And the Canadians are very happy about that, by the way.
All right.
They're very proprietary about their Tim Hortons, eh?
Well, that's the thing is, I've been making this prediction for months now, and I'm telling you, it's going to be, I don't know, 6 months, you know, year and a half, something like that. I'm telling you. There will be, in the media, there's going to be a big resurgence. There's going to be a number of stories appearing in the media. I guarantee freaking to you this. A bunch of stories in the media about how Americans are, let me say it the way they would say it, Americans are shunning Starbucks and going back to the old-fashioned pleasures of a cup of coffee and a donut. Our Gary Baumgarten has this story, and there's going to be some spate of stories in the media about how Americans aren't buying $5 lattes anymore. They're getting, like, the dollar cup of coffee and the 50-cent donut. I know how the media operates.
Well, and, here's what I was going to ask you, actually, along those lines. The chain that is closing, how do their prices compare to Starbucks?
That's a good question, Sarah. How would you say the coffee people prices compare to Starbucks?
You get more for your money, definitely. Instead of, like a Starbucks 16-ounce comes with two shots, coffee people it comes with three, and I think it's a little cheaper.
So they do undercut a little bit. They are, and more to the point, Starbucks coffee tastes like burnt charcoal tire shavings to me. I mean, it just, I actually have this theory. It's my wife's theory, but I'm going to take credit for it. My wife, Laura, her theory is actually that Starbucks coffee is intentionally bad, meaning the actual house coffee. When you go in and say, hey, just give me a coffee with cream. Her theory is that coffee is intentionally bad so that when you go in, you will not order the coffee because, of course, they don't make as much money on that as they do on, like, a Frappuccino, so that you will order a sort of sweet coffee drink because that's where all the money is. That's her theory.
It's interesting, but I know that Portland is like Seattle almost with the coffee, right? You guys really love your coffee there, right?
We have more coffee shops, microbrews, and strip clubs here than any other city in America per capita.
And by the way, it's funny you should mention that, speaking of the Windsor Ballet, which you may have not caught the reference, but that's what the Windsor Ballet is. They are topless and bottomless.
Oh, see, I didn't know. See, I'm not cultured, Gary, so.
Yes, well, you know, that's, but I noticed while I was waiting to come on the air, I mean, how cool is this that you had a gentlemen's club, I guess, as was it a gentleman's club?
It
was being advertised on the air. This is the only station I've ever been on where I've heard that.
Well, we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I think it's wonderful.
We are a wide-ranging station that we try to accommodate all tastes and people, Gary.
Apparently so.
You know what this station is? You know what we are? We welcome all. This is the most American of radio stations. And that we will offer any manner, any variety. We will service any segment of the audience. And we try to be open-minded and broad-souled about such things.
Well, I think that in the case of Wendy's, and it's an interesting comparison to what's happening with Wendy's and Tim Hortons and Starbucks, and I'm sorry, I forget the name.
It's just called Coffee People.
Coffee People. Because the certain quality of Tim Hortons is now guaranteed to sustain.
Well, see, I hope this, and I will say this, I don't mean to knock on y'all East Coast people, but I hope that Tim Hortons does not end up being another Krispy Kreme in that it was sold. Krispy Kreme, really, and you probably don't know this as a New Yorker, but here on the West Coast, Krispy Kreme, it was, I mean, you talk about a media machine that was just cranked up for like a year before they actually opened anywhere near here. Krispy Kreme was trumpeted to us as like it was going to cure cancer. I mean, really, it was like that episode of The Simpsons where, like, Krusty gets knocked off the air because Gabo comes to town. And it was a lot of, like, it's going to be the greatest moment in the history of all civilization when Krispy Kreme. And then it's like you kind of get it and it's, you know, it's just a donut. And so I'm hoping that I'm not let down again by Tim Hortons. That's all I'm saying. So
no, you won't be. You will not be.
All right. Well,
if we meet in Detroit rather than in New York, I will take you to Windsor for some culture and coffee.
That's what I'm talking about. So just to wrap up here, if you would like to be ahead of the curve, if you would like to be creating the news instead of just reporting it, Gary, I would like to say this. You ought to be the one to start this spate of stories about how, whether it's true or not, you can make it true, to report that Americans are turning their nose up at the $5 lattes and experiencing the simple joy of a donut and a cup of Joe. If you start that story right now, I'm telling you, it'll sweep the country within like 6 weeks.
It probably will, because if CNN says it, it's true.
That's what I'm saying. And because Americans and most of the media, and I exclude you fine folks from this, but most of the media is just like rings through the nose. You know what I mean? Just waiting to be led.
It happens occasionally.
You can. Thank you. That's a very diplomatic answer.
Thank you very much.
My friend Gary, we will talk to you soon. You have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend, guys.
There you go. Gary Baumgarten, ladies and gentlemen, in New York City. There you go. All right. It's 503.
I'm glad you kept it happy and didn't talk to him about how the West Coast isn't as important as the East Coast.
No, because he would, you know. He would. You know that isn't he from Detroit? Isn't what he said? He's born in Detroit and lives in New York? Because they're all from, I mean, it's weird. All the CNN guys, they're all like these sort of hard guys. They're all like Roop is from like some housing project in Chicago. Baumgarten's from Detroit, lives in Manhattan, or Jersey. I think he actually lives in Jersey. I mean, Lisa Goddard's the one who, she's the one with the finishing school vibe on her. But even her, and she says she grew up in like some log cabin in the Appalachians or something, just some hard scrabble thing. All right, here we go. The McGruff urban legend story. It's already been planted. It's now on, I'm just going to read to you now. I've got a couple message boards here. I won't give the name, but, oh, this is fantastic. A guy has posted this on a message board, and his avatar is a big picture of Jerry Lewis's bloated face. Look at that.
Awesome.
Genius. We are attempting to start an urban legend on this program, or via this program. Our good friend Nate came up with this. We're attempting to create this urban legend and implant it in the cultural consciousness. So you all today are witnesses to this. Here's a post that's appeared. I heard a PSA with McGruff the Crime Dog the other day, and the voice sounded different. I asked a friend, and he told me the original guy who did the voice was killed in a home break-in, and his son now does the voice in his dad's honor in hope of catching the killer. Anyone else heard this? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then it looks like a legitimate post because it's got like five different italicized SIG files. Well, fantastic. All right. How about this? Here's another one. On the highly rated America's Most... Listen to this. Somebody else is actually taking it a step further. On the highly rated America's Most Wanted, John Walsh invited McGruff the Crime Dog to come along to visit school kids to remind kids to help take a bite out of crime. These programs would be taped for Walsh's TV show. During the assembly at one school for juvenile delinquents, which shall remain nameless, a gang of uncontrollable children took McGruff hostage, and only John Walsh and the TV taping crew saw him killed. McGruff's wife has vowed the tape will never be seen on national television. Rick, I'm going to be spreading this urban legend everywhere. Thank you. Let's see. Rick, I just posted a bulletin on MySpace about McGruff. It is the ultimate message board, says Stephen. All right. There you go, kids. Tell you know, the government... Look, can I just say what we're all thinking? The government ought to hire us to be propagandists. Really? You really want to know? I mean, screw Bill O'Reilly. The government ought to hire us to spread that. You really want to pitch things to the American public? You know, McGruff, a war, whatever. Just hire us. Do we have to break?
Oh, yeah.
I guess we don't have to, but we probably should. Here's what's coming up, kids. I have a big pile of things that are going to kill you. I got a great story here. Speaking of FARC, and I don't know if I'm going to chance to get to it. It's 10 things that really ought to have been invented by now. I have the story. Can I just play a song into the break here?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me read you this real quickly, and then we'll break. This is from today's Jonathan Nicholas column. Living. This is from today's Living section. This is the Jonathan Nicholas column from today, from Friday of the Oregonian. Jim Lashfield knows how to treat a woman right. He once took Joni Mitchell to quality pie. Okay, this story seemed to make sense this morning. Oh, I see. Okay, it's flashing forward. This is a guy named Jim Lashfield, who apparently is a local film director. Blah, 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 blah. Well, anyway, here's why you care about this. Jim Lashfield is back. He's working with Weird Al Yankovic, a match made in pancreatic heaven. Tuesday, Weird Al released Straight Outta Linwood, available at City Game Exchange, a dual disc package with videos. Blashfield's contribution is the video for Pancreas. which is what, and Pancreas is what Weird Al Yankovic would call a style parody, meaning it's not parodying a specific song, but it's a song that's meant to sound in the manner of or in the style of so-and-so. Anyway, so apparently, and I'm looking at the video footage, and I see part of it, it's like a lot of stock footage about pancreases, and I guess you didn't even know that existed, and yet it does. So, know this, that if you pick up the new Weird Al CD/DVD, the video for Pancreas is by a Portlander, Jim Blashfield. And you're asking yourself, Rick, are you going to interview him? The answer is no, because he never actually met or spoke to Weird Al. So, really, what's the point? But we are going to play the song here. Ladies and gentlemen, from the album Straight Out of Linwood, this is Weird Al Yankovic, one of his style parodies in the manner of Brian Wilson. This song is called Pancreas. Back after this on the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. I almost said the Rick Emerson Reality Show. I'm reading this thing in front of me. Rick, fantastic reality TV opportunity. I got this obituary. We'll get to that. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up next hour, we got Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Later on, we have Likas as well. Just a moment, we'll get to Tim Riley. 503-733-2970. I'm reading all these. This is endless. See, here we go. Rick, I just found that Cabbage Patch doll urban legend on Snopes. It looked like some guy from West Virginia is claiming the idea. And there's something about to... Yeah, but this is what I see now. I want to get Clyde on the phone and ask him about it. And find out whether it is that he had claimed to create it or whether he was just passing along. I'm pretty sure he claimed that it was his idea, though. Rick, Dustin Diamond is married. It took 2 seconds on Internet Movie Database to find that out. Also, Ruth Buzzy is alive. All right, there you go. Let's see. I've got another Dustin Diamond thing here.
Do we know if one of the girls is his wife?
Oh, in the video?
Yeah.
No, why would you bother to make a sex video with your wife? What's the point of that?
I don't know. Why would you bother to do what he does in that sex video?
Are you asking me?
No.
I mean, well, I'm just saying, it seems like what's the point? If you're going to do something...
There is no point.
If you're going to be doing something sleazy and horrific, you might as well just go the full 9 yards. Plus, I can't imagine... I mean, maybe I've got some weird Madonna horror complex in my head with women, but I can't imagine somebody... It seems to me there's a difference between being a hooker and being a wife. It seems like once you're a wife, there's certain things you don't want caught on film. Wasn't Tom and Pammy weren't married in that video, right? Or was that their honeymoon video, in fact?
Honeymoon.
I'm just saying there's things you have to... It seems like... What?
It's kind of sad, because all the exciting stuff you say is happening before marriage.
No. I'm talking specifically about the Screech video.
Mm.
I'm saying... No, let's be very clear about this. I'm talking about the Screech video, which ends with the Speedy Gonzales, or whatever they call it. That's something, in my opinion, because he's got kids. right? Isn't that the thing? He's got two children?
Oh, God. I don't know.
That's what I'm trying to find here. Yeah, we should stop and clarify exactly what we're talking about here. What is that? It was just sort of a thoughtful kind of a, what would Murrow say? No. My point is not about sex and marriage and all of that, you know, that cliche stuff you hear as such. My point is this. That, A, there's the act that supposedly, the Screech video supposedly ends with, which we are just calling the, Speedy Gonzalez. And you all can look it up yourselves. I'm saying, for that, that doesn't seem like a thing that your wife probably does on video. That seems like a thing you probably have to pay someone to do on video. It just seems, especially if, as in this case, I believe it's the case, he's got two kids. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that once you have kids, you can't ever have a, you know, you can't ever have a spicy side to your personality. But I'm saying,
I bet this is like a drunk idea gone horribly awry. Like, him and all of his friends are just wasted. They're like, oh, this could totally help out your career. And he agreed to it. Somebody leaked it. And then he sobered up. He's like, oh, crap.
I just don't understand. I mean, because Nate has that whole theory that he had to pay, not he, Nate, but that Screech had to pay two women to get it on with him to film it.
Other people say that, too.
Because, I mean, you always wonder about that. You always wonder if it's just being a celebrity. Like, I always bring up that Verizon guy, the kind of Todd the Corpse-looking guy in the Verizon ads. And I was wondering if that guy gets laid off being the Can You Hear Me Now guy.
He totally does.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. So is it just, and I'm not trying to say women are shallow, because men are shallow in their own way. But, I mean, are women really just shallow enough that it's like, you're that guy in the Verizon billboard. Do me now. I mean, is that...
Well, that's the definition of a star effer.
Yeah, I guess maybe I figured that
people
the star
like
has
to
be a
close,
little...
No, people like to be close to fame, be it, you know, if you're not shining so bright anymore or not.
It just makes you wonder about all that, like the Maytag repairman guy and all of those. You just wonder how many of those, you know, you're that guy in the Orkin ad. You know, just the whole thing is very puzzling to me. But I do believe that... What?
I don't know how your mind works.
I'm just saying the whole thing is that Screech's got two kids, and... Once you have kids, even if there was a woman, can we
kids that can probably use the internet?
And here's what I'm saying.
Oh,
this is what I was. This is the point I was making when I said you don't get your wife to make. I mean, first of all, though, let's be honest. If it's not, I mean, there's a difference between just an ordinary guy, and then if you're like, I know, I don't even mean saying this, Screech, who apparently has some pull with the ladies. If your stardom is of a sufficient level that you can just get a bunch of chicks to come and frolic with you on video. Like, really, why would you bother to make one of them your wife? It seems like you ought to just go the whole nine yards with that. Secondly, so it's sort of a narrowing field. A, can you get some women to come have sex on camera with you? B, can you get two women to have sex with you on camera at the same time? And see how we're doing it. We're narrowing this here. Because with each question, it seems like the pool of women who would be up for this sort of thing diminishes. C, you're Screech. D, you wish for this dual female encounter with Screech on camera to end with a singularly disgusting sex act.
Oh, and his wife's pretty, too.
Well, that's, well, you know, so that's what I'm saying. It seems like, and where was I even going with this? My point is, though, I don't know what my point, but my point, the whole thing is just horrifying to me. I don't know where I was going. Here's where I was going with this. Okay, hold on. But here's where I was going with this. So... It seems like with each one of those variables that you add in, the pool of available women you have to draw from diminishes a lot. Because, I mean, if you, and I'm not going to ask you your thoughts on this specifically, but I'm saying you just to conjure up whatever celebrity you would absolutely just sleep with in a heartbeat, whether it's Bob Dylan or whether it's whether it's this, the frog on the front of the New York Times magazine, whoever it is. I'm just saying there's things that he could probably... request or specify that would make you then decline to be with him in any sort of biblical sense. So it seems like the number of women that Screech would probably be able to find who would be into this sort of thing, it's probably very small. Now, if you add into that the fact that you have two kids and you, as you just said, you know that the kids will eventually get on Google and they'll be typing Screech into a search engine, and the way the internet works is the first thing that's going to come up. I mean, I'm not saying that having kids necessarily makes you all kinds of responsible, but it does seem like if you're a mom, this is probably the sort of thing you're going to avoid doing. That's my only observation here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the real reason you're here today. It's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Breaking news, Scarlett Johansson's hourglass figure and plum movie roles have brought her many fans, among them, clearly, the editors of Esquire magazine, who have crowned her the sexiest woman alive. A 21-year-old actress poses...
21?
That's what it says.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
God damn, I'm old.
On
21.
The cover, he wears a bra and a white Calvin Klein mini dress.
Really?
Oh! Mm-hmm.
Is there a picture of that?
Not yet.
All right. Okay. You just keep talking. I'm going to be typing over here.
Johansson, whose screen credits include The Black Delilah, Lost in Transmission, and Matchpoint, says she would rather be admired for her attributes than her sex appeal. Where's my brain? Oh, what about my brain? What about my heart? What about my kidneys? What about my gallbladder?
Where's my brain? I left it around here somewhere. Is she saying, did she really say, where's my, what about my kidneys? What about my gallbladder?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Man, and there's a, let me just tell you this. You know, this is the problem. I'm doing that thing where you're typing, or you're speaking while I'm typing, and I'm typing in brain and gallbladder.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlet. How do you spell? Is it two T's? Spell Johansson for me,
yes.
Tim.
Yes. J-O-H-A-N-S-S-O-N.
Scarlett Johansson. Esquire?
Esquire, yes.
She's posing in what? A bra and a something?
She is posing in a bra and a white Calvin Klein mini dress and a series of photos inside showing her as an enigmatic trailer park temptress. She wears cleavage-bearing black negligee paired with an open white robe. Among other get-ups.
I think Rick's head's going to explode.
I'm looking at that right now,
actually.
I feel
uncomfortable being in the same room as
Hello.
You.
Well, look, you can't deny that.
She's absolutely stunning.
You can't.
It is.
Okay. I'm just saying. What is the last good movie she made, though? No, she made that Woody Allen film, but that's it. She made Matchpoint. What is the last good movie she made before Matchpoint? Anyone?
The one with Bill Murray.
Lost in Translation. That's like 5 years ago, though. She was like 10. Yeah, she's made, I mean, the problem is, and it's like, Scarlett Johansson, I mean, she may very well become a cautionary tale. First of all, she's only 21, which I guess gives her a few more years, because I thought she was older than that for some reason. But there's a long, you have to be really, how do I put this? You have to be really careful, when it comes to bosoms like that, because if you are an actress and you don't stop that kind of stuff right in its tracks, then you become Jennifer Love Hewitt. And Jennifer Love Hewitt, Jane Mansfield was the same way. Or Jane Mansfield, I mean, the thing about it is those breasts turn on you after a while. They get you in the door, but it's like if you let, and I can't believe that I'm a man here telling her to cover her breasts up. I'm just saying, if you let people position you as just being the big hootered girl, pretty soon you're going to end up on like the CW. And that's no way to end your career. That happened to Jane Mansfield. It happened to Jennifer Love Hewitt. God, who else? Well, I mean, Dolly Parton managed to avoid it because she was really fantastically talented. Jennifer Connelly, you all, if you're under the age of like, if you're under 30, I would say, or under 25, certainly, you don't remember that sort of career hell that Jennifer Connelly went through. And when I say career hell, I mean for her, not necessarily for us. The biggest mistake that Jennifer Connelly ever made in her life was making a movie called Career Opportunities. And there's a movie called Career Opportunities. The only, and you ask any guy, and I know that, women can be horrified that this sort of thing is on our mental hard drives, but it's just the way that men are. Every guy my age remembers the movie Career Opportunities for a single scene. There is a single defining scene in the movie Career Opportunities that every guy has committed to memory and could just replay in full Panascope color, frame by frame in his head. And it is a sequence of Jennifer Connelly wearing like a white, I don't know if it's like a halter top or a tank top or whatever, a thing that is... where her cakes are just all hanging out, and she's riding one of those quarter-operated toy horses in front of a supermarket. That is in like slow motion, back and forth, for what seems like about 5 minutes. And that, the next 15 years, every gig she got was just based on that scene. And you'll notice that she had to work it was a long, hard road out of hell for her to not just be known as the big boob girl from on top of the toy horse for the rest of her life. She really had to struggle against that. So, yeah, these are dangerous times for Scarlett Johansson.
Anna Nicole Smith and her boyfriend, Howard K. Stern, exchange marriage vows, but the ceremony is illegal, says her other attorney, Michael Scott. I don't know how many attorneys she has. Scott said the exchange of vows happened aboard a catamaran yesterday, right before the end of the show. 18 days after Smith's son died as he was visiting her in the Nassau Hospital, so she was mourning at the time. 3 days earlier, her daughter was born in the same hospital where her son died. Now we're back to the strange twist in the story, saying Authorities in the Bahamas are awaiting their own toxicology results on Daniel's death.
Well, this is exactly like, now, if you all remember a couple of years ago, this is just like Mick Jagger and Jerry Hall. When Mick Jagger and Jerry Hall were splitting up, it turns out that they, I mean, there's like the real marriage, which is where you go and sign a thing and you file a thing and a guy notarizes or something, and then they stamp and then they put on rings and then they photocopy it and then you, whatever, and then you're done. And then there was like the Mick Jagger Jerry Hall romance, which is where a guy with a bone in his nose like jumped around you on the sand and then he doused you with papaya juice and then he said, oh, la, 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 and then you were married. And Jerry Hall, by the way, found this out the hard way when she tried to divorce. You got to give it up to Mick Jagger, by the way, for being just a crafty bastard. When Jerry Hall tried to nail him for alimony, and it was revealed that they were never legally married. And that's one of those things everybody sort of forgotten about. That was one of those stories that flared up real big, and then everybody kind of forgot about it. But then Mick Jagger, because he did, of course, study at the London School of Economics, and he doesn't really have a heart. He does just have sort of a heart-shaped cash register, not like Gene Simmons. And, man, he was thinking way in advance because, they got married on the beach in Tahiti or someplace. It was a completely non-binding, non-legal marriage. And the only point of this Anna Nicole Smith thing seems to be to keep this bodybuilder guy in Tucson or whatever the hell he is from claiming he's the baby's daddy. I have no idea what that's all about.
Apparently he's a photographer.
All right.
Meanwhile, Brad Pitt wants another child, preferably a boy. He wants a biological one. He is adamant and wants Angelina Jolie to get pregnant again right away.
Uh-huh.
Angelina, on the other hand, isn't on board with that plan. She's ready to adopt again. Plus, the pillow-lipped actress has
a pillow-lipped actress
has a profoundly busy work schedule with at least three films in the making. The couple's brood already includes two adopted children, Maddox. It sounds like something you take for regularity. And Zahara. And one biological kid, Shiloh Nouvelle.
And is that with... That's not with Brad Pitt, though, is it?
No. Is it? I don't think so. The biological
Shiloh
kid?
Nouvelle?
I keep getting confused.
Yes.
Where was I when she pushed out a kid?
Yeah.
I do live in this country. Where was I?
We were all distracted by Katie Holmes. She was kind of overshadowed by that.
We can't let that happen again.
Was this when we were on the air?
No, I think it was a little before that.
Were we unemployed?
We were unemployed.
I went through a long period of...
The story doesn't matter.
Okay, seriously, that's a time... That's sort of like that pre-Stalin era where all the films have just been destroyed.
When we're off the air, so are you.
Exactly. When life comes to a halt, nothing that happens when we're off the air, really. If we don't come here and talk about it and make pithy remarks, and if I don't quote, like Piper Laurie at least a couple times, it doesn't matter. It didn't really happen.
Back to sound bites again to Bank B. We're coming up on number two here.
Reload Bank B. Okay.
We're going to number two.
Okay.
That new Showtime drama we talked about earlier will test the extremes of situational ethics. Dexter follows the Miami Police Department blood spatter expert by day turned serial killer by night. The catch is, Dexter only murders other serial killers. Actor James Remus, who plays Dexter's foster father, Harry, says...
Actor James what?
Remus.
I hardly know us.
He plays Dexter's foster father, Harry, says his character also encourages Dexter to use his homicidal tendencies only for the good.
The idea is that the kid has got these impulses, they're in place, and rather than have him institutionalized or executed, Harry helps the guy direct them towards becoming a useful member of society.
Okay.
So he rather directs.
This is an edgy program, then. Okay.
Viewers will find themselves in the moral dilemma when it comes to Dexter.
That is the challenge, because the guy is a serial killer, and they are, by definition, passionless people. But he manages to inject passion into it.
I think that's a
story. It's very complex. It's really wonderful.
Yes, that's a rash generalization that we take issue with, Rick. I take umbrage with this statement. Why aren't I more... because I don't have Showtime, and I'm not going to get Showtime.
You don't watch it for nothing.
That's the thing. That's really the thing. How much does Showtime even cost a month?
I don't know.
I don't know how much anything costs anymore.
$15, $16?
I have become one. See, but who knows? And we could be like Bob Dole. But how much is milk? 5 cents?
If you buy something for $12 from Comcast, it always turns out to be $150. So what can you do?
and
you can't live without it, so you don't question it. You just write a check for it every month.
That's my thing. And not only do I write a check, as one step beyond that, not unlike a lot of us, I just have the direct payment. Comcast could be charging me $5,000 a week for something. I wouldn't even know.
Oh.
And it goes on a credit card that I'm already in debt on anyway. So, I mean, how would I even know if they've charged... That actually raises a really interesting point. I have no idea how much I'm paying for cable. And I know it makes me sound like an out-of-touch America, but I'm really not. I think a lot of people are like this now, where you don't... I don't pay cash for a lot of stuff now. And see, before, this is all Laura, actually. It's all her influence. Because, the damn woman, because when I met her, before I met Laura, I used to pay cash for everything. And if I couldn't afford it, right, and I had to do that, I had to be that way. Because I, as a radio person, I had no money. I was always broke. And so if I did not have the cash in hand, I would not buy something. And I would just wait until I had the money. And so she's the one who's, you know, and I had that dilemma of how did I get a credit card, because I had no credit, but how could I get credit without a card, blah, blah, blah. And so she's the one who said, well, you want to get a card with a low limit and then pay it off and whatever. But, of course, as we've discussed on the show before, she has like a titanium card that is like a $100,000 limit or some crap, because she's got a so-called real job. And so everything just comes, it just gets put on this credit card. And it's like because of the, Lycus was talking about this the other day, because of the TiVo, I no longer know when anything is on. I no longer know what network anything airs on. I no longer know what day of the week something airs on. Because of direct deposit, I no longer know how much anything costs. I just am slowly being stripped of all of my cultural knowledge. And so I'm totally going to be one of those political candidates someday where they say, like, sir, how much does your cable bill cost? And I'm going to be like, $100? And I just have no idea. All right. Well, so Showtime costs... Something or other. But I'm not going to pay for it. Who am I kidding? Oh. The only reason I have HBO for The Sopranos. That's it. I have HBO for The Sopranos and Entourage. I will not be getting Showtime. So there you go. So all of your advertising is pointless. Do we have another sound cut?
No.
All right, good.
Not for now. We're going to have some coming up about pumpkins. Because we're getting into the pumpkin season.
Robert, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. You're a cool dude, because you were talking about that Brad Pitt, the Jolie thing when they
hold
were...
Hold on, let me... Sarah, did that go? Are we linking over there?
Yep.
All right, hold on.
You are a master's tool.
All right, there you go. Scotty wanted to be playing. So
that be a serious craftsman tool?
I was talking about the Brad and Angelina thing?
Yeah.
You've talked about it so many times.
I don't even remember this.
I don't remember it either.
This is like Total Recall. It's like somebody's gone into my head and removed this whole section of my life. When... I know this sound. I'm.
Well, it happened before we were back on the air.
The baby.
But we talked about it. Yeah.
What did I say about the baby?
We would talk about how their baby looks a lot like them, as opposed to Katie Holmes' baby, who looks like Chris Klein.
I don't remember it.
Tim?
Oh. No.
All right.
Driving a blank.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Just sort of. Nah. You know what that sound was? That was sort of like I wash my hands of you sound. Let me read this. I'm going to read this, and we'll do one more with Tim, and then we'll break. We got Scott Daly coming up later on. This is from the Denver Post. By the way, if you'd like to feel better about yourself and your life, if maybe things are going poorly for you, if maybe you're dealing with difficulties, you're finding that, like Sisyphus, you're rolling the rock up the hill every day only to have it roll back on top of you, and you're feeling gloom, darkness, despair, and agony, oh me, about your day-to-day travails on this earth. I'd like you to now hear the obituary of the worst life ever.
Ah.
I read this without augmentation or alteration from the DenverPost.com. This is the obituary of Thomas L. Cook. This is by Claire Martin, Denver Post staff writer. Thomas L. Cook, who died. Do we have music? Do we have any sort of like a funeral music? Do we have anything like that? Let me see. I think I might have some funeral music here. Some sort of a downbeat sort of a... No, that's not appropriate. Well, we'll let this work. You just bring us down a bit. This is from the DenverPost.com. That seems really wrong. Thomas L. Cook, who died at 54 when he was fatally hit by a car on September 11th, spent much of his life recovering from misadventures that plagued him even in the womb. He was accident prone, I swear to God, even before he was born, said his sister, Mady. He had serious accidents as a child. He broke his collarbone 3 times. He was hit in the head 1 time by a teeter-totter and had to have blood drained out of the base of his skull. Wrong place, wrong time. Boy, howdy, she says. That was my brother. After the first few visits to the emergency room, Cook's family joked that he must have 9 lives, an opinion shared by a neighbor, Dr. Arnold Silverman, a pediatric physician. 9 lives, he certainly used them all up, Silverman said. Every time the phone rang and it was the Cooks, I just knew that I'd be right over to fix something with Thomas. When Thomas Cook returned from a high school skiing trip complaining about abdominal pain, Silverman looked at his stomach and sent him straight to the children's hospital. He had to have an emergency spleenectomy to remove a hemorrhaging spleen. The organ, injured a few days earlier in a pickup football game, began bleeding while he was on a snow-covered hill. 6 months later, Cooks, a teenager, fell out of a go-kart he was driving. The Cooks again called Silverman. Silverman told them to call an ambulance. They took him to University Hospital, where a surgeon drained large amounts of blood from inside his head, relieving pressure on his brainstem. He went back home, but was back a few hours later after the bleeding resumed, at one point pooling inside his ears. The third major accident, involving an out-of-town car, left Cook, then a promising Colorado State University student, with severe brain damage and in a semi-vegetative coma for more than 5 months. No one had any hope for his survival as someone with a viable life, Silverman said. Then one day, he woke up and seemed fine. It was an incredible comeback. When at last he recuperated, he found a job as an assistant computer programmer at Denver's Medicare office. He made fast friends among his colleagues, who learned to enjoy his singular braying laughter. Though he walked through life with the gingerly trepidation of someone negotiating an ice-glazed sidewalk, his confidence and buoyant nature returned. Then, driving near the first accident occurred, he heard the familiar sickening crunch of metal on metal as another vehicle slammed into his car, his fourth auto accident. That was when he broke his back for the first time, his sister recalled. He broke it two other times after that, and he broke his ribs and falls in various accidents. He was really messed up. To keep his bones strong, Cook exercised daily with a walk that began every day at 1:45 p.m. Among the few indulgences he allowed himself was a brownie that he bought every morning at his favorite bakery. Mourners overflowed the church that held Cook's memorial service last week. They had to bring in extra chairs, the priest said. Cook was killed last week at a crosswalk when he was run down by a semi. There you go.
That was a good story.
We'll be back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show.